Hello, this is Dr. Jeffrey Lieberman of Columbia University speaking to you today for Medscape. The title of my comments could be called, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. Now, you may recognize this phrase from a movie that came out in the 1970s called Network, and I'll explain why this is apt in a moment. In the news, there are many political issues that are roiling our country, from immigration to terrorism to healthcare, among others. And healthcare is, of course, something that is of great concern to us as healthcare professionals. And frankly, the debate over our healthcare system, whether to repeal the ACA, how to replace it, what to replace it with, to scrap it, to fix it, is to me seemingly adolescent, immature, senseless, and represents an unserious effort by the government to tackle one of the most complex and consequential issues that faces us. Now, what does this have to do with the movie Network and I'm Mad as Hell? Well, this movie, which won an Academy Award, was written by a playwright and screenwriter named Paddy Chayefsky. Now, Paddy died prematurely, tragically, from cancer in 1981. But his work was quite impressive and really predictive, prescient of the future. One movie that he wrote was called The Hospital, and this came out in the late 60s, starring George C. Scott as the lead character, and he played a chief of staff in a major New York hospital, and the story is about his psychological difficulties and sort of facing where he had come in his career in being a physician, but trying to manage a major urban teaching hospital in a society that made excessive demands and placed regulations and under-resourced it, creating a situation which was all but untenable. And even though that was made over a half a century ago, it still seems very relevant today, and anybody who hasn't seen it, I recommend you see it on Netflix or Amazon. I'm sure it's available at the hospital. Chayefsky followed that up several years later with a Network, which was a movie about a television news anchor modeled after Walter Cronkite, who ratings were down in his program, and as he was being sacked, developed a psychotic break, and his psychosis was paraded on his program as something novel and innovative in programming and got great ratings. But in the course of his ranting during one of his programs, he enumerated all of the things that we as citizens of the country suffered in the context of slings and arrows of outrageous fortune that were solvable but weren't being dealt with by the powers that be, whether it was a municipal, state, federal government, or whomever. And he then exhorted all of the viewers to get up, go to the window, open it up, and to shout out as loud as they could, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And that reflected it struck a chord in people, and it reflected a feeling that individuals have in a country where there are systemic problems that persist, affect everybody, and aren't being addressed adequately. And I think we can clearly say that's the case for healthcare. Now, why is it that healthcare should be such an unsolvable problem that would be the source of so much difficulty? Well, it's mainly because of the fact that healthcare is something that has to be ubiquitously available to people. There is cost associated with it, and it requires providing people with equal access or some level of access, and a way of sort of financing that care. And herein lies the problem. As healthcare has become more sophisticated over the past century, and particularly in the past several decades, the cost of delivering care, healthcare has increased. This has brought many benefits: quality of life, reduction of disease, morbidity, mortality, increased survival rates, but it comes at a price. And the price has been reflected, among other ways, by the increasing proportion of the gross domestic product that's consumed by healthcare expenditures. And back in the 50s and 60s, it was around 5%. Now it's verging on 20% and rising higher than inflation. There has been no successful effort to try and develop a healthcare policy and system of financing that has been successfully developed and implemented. And as a result, this problem has been muddling along with rising rates only being dealt with by the brute force of the marketplace. The last serious attempt to try and develop a top-down comprehensive reform in mental health policy was during the first Clinton administration, early 1990s, which was really doomed to failure by, among other things, the Thelma and Louise commercials almost from the start. The next effort really occurred with the Affordable Care Act that President Obama, with much effort and travail, managed to get passed and to sign into law. And it has been, albeit with a great deal of difficulty and complaint, has been implemented these past several years. But it is now precisely this, which was a rallying cry of the presidential campaign and is a goal of repeal in the current administration in Congress. So what's wrong with this? The problem is that while the ACA certainly isn't the ideal solution and isn't perfect, it was represented at the very least an effort to do something. And it can't be repealed without being replaced. And it's not clear that there's anything that has been well thought out that would be better to replace it. What should be done? Well, I'm not a politician, I'm not a legislator, I'm not an economist, I'm a physician, but it seems to me this is not rocket science. This really is something that common sense could articulate the questions and develop a way to answer. First question is healthcare a right or is it a commodity? If it's a commodity, then you get what you pay for. If it's a right, then everybody deserves it. So if it's a right, then I guess it's a government's responsibility to ensure that everyone deserves it. Well, if that's the case, as was suggested with the passage of the Medicare and then Medicaid legislation, then how much is the government prepared to spend? How much do we in a society want to spend? Is it 5% of our GDP? Is it 25% of our GDP? And that determines how much money we can spend on delivering care to the entire population. Now, this then needs to be translated into an infrastructure, a workforce, and a financing system which will enable this care to be provided at whatever level we as a society represented by our government has determined should be done. And what are the benefits and what are the limitations? Are we going to give everything possible to everyone through end-of-life care, or are we going to have to ration it? Now, this is not an unprecedented situation. Other countries have dealt with this already. There are single-payer systems, there are single-provider systems, there are hybrid systems, and they're non-existent healthcare systems. But we have really a default system in which nobody's taken the responsibility to try and develop something in an enlightened fashion, and the result is what we have, which isn't working. Now, Another issue that must be considered in any serious approach to try and deal with healthcare has to do with how we view biomedical research and the advances that it provides. Because the real solution to disease, care, cost is through research, which provides ostensibly a better understanding, better treatments, and ultimately cures for illness. And we've seen this over history of how scientific breakthroughs lead to medical innovations that lead to reduction of disease, mortality, reduction in costs, greater productivity, longer lives. Right now, we barely fund biomedical research. Now, I say that as a researcher who's been feeding at the trough of the NIH for my entire career, but I really feel that's the case. And even though the United States is the most generous country in the world in funding biomedical research, it's still inadequate. Now, what do I mean by inadequate? The federal budget is $4 trillion. The amount of that budget, which is consumed by CMS, the Center for Medicare and Medicaid Services, which is what the government pays to fund health care for older people and poor people, is over 25%, over a quarter of that. So we're spending between a quarter and a third of our total federal budget on health care. The amount of money that is given to the NIH, which funds the vast majority of biomedical research, our hope for the future, is $33 billion. So that's like 0.8% of the federal budget. And if we break that down into the disease areas, the amount of money that's spent on mental health care and addictions is a pittance. It's maybe $2 billion of that $33 billion. It's a fraction per capita of what cancer gets, cardiovascular disease gets. Now, it's not that we want to take money away from our colleagues in other disciplines, but the fact is that when you look at the expense caused by mental disorders and addictions, it certainly is at the top of the disease areas and warrants more equitable funding for research. So, what kind of logic applies to spending 0.8% of your budget on something that is the greatest threat to the nation's economy, which is healthcare costs that are already consuming over a quarter of the federal budget? Other countries, the European Union, Asian countries, Singapore, China, Japan, they're spending from 4 to 12% on biomedical R&D. Finally, I would say that since we're talking about how we would affect meaningful changes that would really enhance our healthcare in this country and the progress we make through research, which ultimately has to be translated into therapeutics, we need to do things to the regulatory agencies, the federal government, that are rate-limiting steps in this process. And first and foremost among this is the FDA. So the FDA approves all drugs and devices. It's antiquated legislation that's been amended many times. The FDA is tasked with something which is really an insurmountable challenge. It's under-resourced, and it could benefit from legislative reform, increased resourcing, and more effective leadership. In regard to the latter, I'm really sorry to say that the former FDA commissioner, Dr. Robert Califf, who came to the FDA from Duke, where he was a cardiologist and the director of the Duke Institute for Clinical Research, which was an academic clinical research organization that conducted comparative effectiveness studies, he was, by qualification, the best qualified individual in the history of the FDA. However, his tenure lasted only a year. And he's already had to submit his resignation, which was accepted, and we're awaiting the appointment of a new director. So that's not an auspicious start, but I just wanted to mention this in connection with the FDA, which I think is part of the grand solution to how we finance healthcare. If we don't make a reform of healthcare policy and how we finance it, a political imperative that we are going to continue with the same dysfunctional, inefficient, overly expensive system until there is a crisis, and that calls the question. And I don't see how any mature, serious society with a functioning government should allow that to happen. So thank you very much for listening today. I'm Dr. Jeffrey Lieberman, Columbia University, speaking to you today from Medscape.